Welcome to the 250. I'm Danielle.
I'm Chris.
And this week we watched Whiplash.
Why can't my name ever come first?
Because I do the. Do you want to do the introduction?
No, is that what you want? Terrible idea.
No. Exactly. I barely get through it.
I understand.
It, so.
I'm the guest star while your actual partner studies abroad.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Also, there's that whole graduating.
Yeah.
Thing.
So I mean, if you want to come back next semester, it's fine.
I'll be honest with you. I'll probably be a little sad. Actually, next semester. I mean, I know I'll have some time. Okay, this is going to get really existential and really sad, so never mind. Let's talk about the movie.
Let's talk about
speaking of being sad and scared for your future.
Oh, my God. Yes, so Whiplash comes at number 44 on the list.
The Untouchables was about 125 spots too high.
Yeah.
That I think 44 for me, now that we're kind of like, you know, in the nifty-50, I think is like, maybe 5 too high or like 10 too high.
Yeah, but I think it's a valid position.
I think it's probably the first movie since we watched The Departed. Shout out.
It
will never not be mentioned. It's the first movie since we watched The Departed that I thought to myself, yep, okay. This is one we got.
Solid, yeah.
So fair enough.
Yeah.
Solid.
Okay, so I'll just do some like exposition.
Yeah, give him the lowdown, give him the rundown.
Basically, Whiplash is about this kid, Neiman is his last name?
Yeah, Andrew Neiman.
Andrew Neiman, and he's a drummer in a jazz band. And he meets J.K. Simmons' character,
whose
name escapes
Fletcher.
Me as well. Fletcher.
Fletcher,
yes, who is a terrifyingly like strict like conductor.
Yes, it should also
band.
It's also worth noting that he meets this man while in a jazz band at the top music school in the country, which
yeah.
I don't actually know. Does the Schaefer Academy actually exist?
I mean,
conservatory?
Maybe. It could.
Okay, probably should have figured that out before we started.
Don't think so, though, because I feel like this was kind of a rough movie.
Yeah, wow.
If
they did exist, like I was about to say,
yeah.
You definitely don't want to be looking like you're going to employ anybody, you know, who is so adept in mental terrorism.
Oh my gosh.
J.K. Simmons is like, holy crap.
Like, I have never been like so tense while watching a movie.
I just got really upset because J.K. Simmons does such a good job of reminding you, if you've ever done like anything music like outside of school, of how much of an absolute prick music teachers can
mm-hmm.
be for
yeah.
good reason, but you know, like
yeah.
golly.
I used to play the piano and I never practiced.
Yeah.
But my teacher was like nice. If I had I
oh,
think
really?
Yeah. He was like he would like get annoyed that I didn't practice, but then we'd be like, but I mean
I had a
I'm
few
to,
I had a few
so.
Like choral directors who were real nightmares. But to be honest with you, it's because, you know, high school singers, especially high school, I wasn't even that good. I'm not that good. I am not a good singer, but
oh.
at the same time, like Ooh, yeah. they don't like it. They're always Italian, too. I don't know why the choral directors are all Italian. And they look at you and they're like, hey. And you're like, no.
Just,
sorry about it, but no. Yeah, no, it's absolutely crazy. Anyway, he meets this guy. And what happens next, Danielle?
He basically kind of goes insane trying
yeah.
to achieve this, like, become one of the greats. That's basically, like, kind of his goal
yep.
in life. And he's basically stopping at nothing to get to the status.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, we never really see him get there.
Yeah.
But, like, we see him go crazy.
Perfect, perfect, perfect.
Yeah.
That's an interesting... So, never seeing him get there is an interesting point, which we'll get to later. But, for now, what'd you like? What was good? What'd you appreciate?
I liked how, like, the music scenes were shot, especially the first one.
Yeah.
In the... I thought that was really cool how they, like, close-ups on the instruments
yep.
and like the silence they used really well and
mm.
like they kind of like built up the tension before playing, which was really cool because
yeah,
like
that's true.
You never really like compare like jazz music to like intense tension building stuff.
Ooh, maybe you don't.
Depending
Ooh,
on the jazz
I really
song.
Hope no jazz
I'm thinking like slow jazz. Okay.
Oh my God.
Just kidding. I lied.
One of my best friends
that.
Is in a jazz band and listening to him talk about it is like listening to Winston Churchill discuss tactics, you know, in World War II. It's
yes.
really scary. Except my best friend is much less witty than
mm.
Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
And also doesn't smile.
He sounds like a great guy.
Oh, it's Chris Almeida. It's
okay.
The damn charmer.
Yeah.
No, they take it very seriously. No, I think you're picking up on something that's like really cool. I think the use of silence in this movie is really, really solid. Because silence and sound are sort of two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sibilance in that sentence.
Yeah.
Just going to keep on keeping on. And you're right. Like they definitely do sort of build the tension, especially in moments of, in moments where J.K. Simmons' character, where Terrence Fletcher is, you know, revamped the band for another
mm-hmm.
go.
Yeah.
Because to be honest with you, there's nothing more uncomfortable in a musical setting than when you have to stop.
Yeah.
When you are stopped and
in
then
the middle.
In the moment
Ooh.
When you're about to start again. Exactly. When you're stopped in the middle
like,
of the song. Because there's only supposed to be silence at the beginning
at
and
the
at the end.
End.
You're supposed to make it all the way through the piece of music. And when there's that silence, things get really uncomfortable and really awkward, which obviously J.K. Simmons is taking full advantage of.
Yeah, he definitely deserved, I feel like, definitely deserved Best Supporting Actor Oscar.
Yes,
he won,
yes, 100%.
Wow.
That was an incredible
performance. Honestly, the only other thing I know him from is those...
I don't know.
Farmers insurance.
I do not know
commercials.
Him. Are you? He's in the farmers
like,
insurance.
Yeah,
commercials?
He's like just like a cool like insurance.
I really hope he gets better. He's gotten
like,
better work since.
That's the only other thing I can think he's in. He's definitely in other things, but that's like the one.
Yeah.
That's just like one thing. Like he's in these farmers insurance commercials, and he's like a professor teaching people how to like
that's
insure
insane.
People.
That's absolutely insane. Because I like I said, I'm a movie neophyte. You know, I'm no Graham Pirro. I'm no Brian McMahon. For anybody who doesn't know those names, those are sort of the Georgetown Voices resident movie experts, or two guys who like to think that they're movie experts.
Yeah.
I hate you punks. You know, I'm no movie expert, but at the same time, I would have said that this guy had been sort of like a Hollywood mainstay for, you know, 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if he's doing farmers commercials, I don't know.
Right.
We'll have to go check his filmology afterwards. That's really incredible, though. It's a 100% deserved performance. Freaking hate this guy.
Yeah, he. Oh,
like you hate him.
From
you just
like the
hate him.
First press, and I hated how they would like put him in situations where you're like, okay, he's kind of like, but the like they showed him with a kid. That was the one thing. Like he was like talking to a kid. And he's like, you're gonna come play for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And he seemed like a good guy. And then on a dime, he would be like,
well, I think that's what makes
insane.
You hate him even more is that you know they humanize him, which makes him even more dangerous and more threatening because it's not just like it's not a. You realize that this, well. I'll say it, and then you can sort of
bleep you out,
monkey around with it. No, I'm not gonna swear. No. But I think in humanizing a character and showing that it's not all you know bluster and badness the entire time, and by showing like, oh, there are these moments where he's capable of very tender feelings with the
like
kid,
he's not just a one note person,
or with you know his former student who ends up committing suicide.
Why did he lie about it? He lied. He said he got in a car crash, didn't he? And then it comes out that he committed suicide.
Well, this actually plays into the point because he probably knows.
They probably
told him on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that scene's probably supposed to, or at least in my personal opinion, that seems kind of meant to convey, look, this guy understands what he's doing. This guy understands that he is inflicting like this mental terrorism onto these people. But... And it's a scene where he, I think, is reconciling the fact that he's pushing these kids, but he wants
he's like
to push them
it.
Beyond. Exactly. And that it plays into the speech that he makes to Neiman at the end of the movie where he goes, I never had, you know, the real outstanding player. I never had anybody like that. And so it's, I think, in that moment in lying and saying, oh, he died in a car crash, not in his apartment, swinging by a belt. It's him reconciling what he's doing with what he's dreaming about, which is probably a really terrible feeling. Because on the one hand, he's basically just killed a human being. And on the other hand, he's chasing after that holy grail.
Yeah, I think that's like part like one of the big things in the movie, like chasing after this perfection, and then like your family not understanding, like that dinner scene when they were talking about the son, like the other son's like, oh, he's a football player, and he's like on Model UN, and then they're like, oh, you have your band thing, and it's like he's like so like passionate about it, and like he's doing really well, and no one like understands.
One liner for days, man. That
was
so. Yeah, I was about to say.
Great.
I was totally on the side. So I was like, on the one hand, I was like, all right, Andrew, look,
calm down.
You're being a prick, but at the same time, yo. That was like straight fire, man.
Yeah,
like,
I was like,
how are you coming back from that? How are you coming? You're not going to answer.
No.
You're not coming back from it.
Yeah, it was
him getting up from that table was the best thing that ever happened to those two. I'm serious.
It was great.
Yeah,
great.
No kidding. Anyway, sorry. I was trying to make a point earlier about.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's fine. Well, that's the whole point of the 250. We just digress. The whole point. I was trying to say what I wanted to get back to you was sort of the idea of silence, but also the idea of. What I should say is how they use sound in this movie, because it's a musical movie, and so it's very easy to sort of look at it and go, oh, like, you know, jazz, like, that's going to be the soundscape of
but
the
I mean,
movie. Like,
they
that's
did use
be,
it, but, like...
And exactly, you know, because it's a movie about music, and you're supposed to... But at the same time, the way that sometimes sounds melt into each other, the way that you can see sort of Neiman melt into himself while he's giving performances, and the sounds that the crew decided to use, and, you know... manipulate, or I think it was really incredible at certain points, because it's one thing to sort of hear these really, really crazy performances that these characters are giving, but at the same time, when certain things are muted or when, you know, certain things melt into one another, there are sort of these theatrical cues that lead you along.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think this is the first movie where I've noticed sort of an emphasis on a technique like that. It was really cool.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Like, the sound was like an extra, more so of an extra layer to the movie.
Yeah.
Like, especially because of a movie about music. But,
yeah.
like, it just added that much more, like, dimension.
It was awesome.
To, yeah.
It was really, really cool.
Definitely.
All right. You got anything else? Like, what's that, man?
I don't know. I just want to talk about the first, band. See, I do take notes. Because sometimes I just got to remember every thought that came into my head.
Yeah.
It made me
when
so
he
upset.
Slapped in the face.
And he was like, just say that you're upset. And I was like, I too am upset right now.
I'm also upset.
Like, and then I don't know. That I just had to go back to that. Because, like, I've never been so just like, oh my God, in a movie. Like, and then when he was like, when he made the guy cry with the, when he was like, you're out of tune, but he wasn't out of tune. And it made me so tense. And he made me feel like I was one of the band members and I just needed to get everything perfect and then when he lost the folder and I don't know, J.K. Simmons' performance.
That's really funny. He actually, at that point, I was thrown back to, because there have definitely been a few instances in my short and not so fantastic performing arts career where I've been put on the spot and I've been put on blast in front of like my entire, in front of like my entire cast or like whatever, and just been absolutely freaking mortified by like what was going on and what was happening to me. And so I was having like these flashbacks and
just
kind of sitting there. I was white knuckling it. I just watched this movie like 2 hours ago and I was white knuckling it on the table that we were literally recording the podcast on.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Which I think again speaks to how phenomenal J.K. Simmons did. That slap in the face scene was crazy. They peddled that scene nonstop in advertising this movie.
Because it's visceral.
Yeah.
Like, it's
it
like,
is visceral.
That's what I was missing from like the last two movies that we watched. Just like a visceral reaction to something from the movie. And I definitely got that from Whiplash.
Yeah,
because,
that's true.
Yeah. It's like, you just feel it. And you're like, oh God.
It's definitely true.
Yeah.
That car crash though.
Oh my gosh. And then he just walks away from it.
Just
like
never
nothing.
Never gets addressed ever again.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Cool.
I guess.
Solid.
Yeah.
Solid times. I was, to be honest with you, I was kind of happy that Neiman at that point. So the first concert that he plays with the studio band, he is sort of like the new guy who kind of screws up and then saves the day. And the second one, you see him kind of develop a little bit of a backbone because Connolly's going to take over. And you know that Connolly, who's another character in the movie, who's another drummer, if you haven't seen it. Apologies.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast.
Spoilers about.
Yeah, seriously. But the second you see him kind of develop a little bit of a backbone, which I liked. On the one hand, I appreciate punctuality, especially in the case of performances. On the other hand, if your guy's there, like, he's there, you know? And so I was kind of happy that Andrew was finally sticking up for himself. To
a degree.
Decide to play after one gets into a car accident, especially knowing that, you know, he's probably concussed. And you see him kind of
bloody.
Yeah, there's probably some, some reaction going down there.
Yeah.
And to do that, I thought that sort of, that erred on the side of self-righteous and a little bit egotistical, which is, I think, what J.K. Simmons' character says to him at some point. He goes, like, how self-important do you think? Like, what is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
He might just be goading him on. I mean,
yeah,
he probably
like,
is.
Honestly, that was the other thing. Like, I just never knew, was it a front? Like, all, like, the nice guy things? Or was it, like, when he was feeling remorse, was he feeling remorse when he was talking about the kid who had killed himself? Like,
Ooh, that's an interesting interpretation.
Like,
is that actually true? Or is he lying about feeling bad because he knows that Andrew's going to find out at some point?
Yeah.
I don't know, that's just like a whole another level of mental terrorism. We have a visitor in the middle of the 250.
Hello.
Hello there, visitor.
Sorry.
No worries. No, we're just talking about Whiplash. You ever seen it?
No.
Well, perfect.
Then,
well, we're about to spoil everything for you.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've digressed, but we're back now. We're back, I promise. What was I going to say? Oh, thoughts. Yeah, we were talking about why would he lie about the car crash. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah, that's open for interpretation, I think. And I think it's probably something that they, I don't know. I feel like if we read too far into this, yeah. I think we read too far into it. And then on the other hand.
But I mean, you had a very different perception of it. Like, I don't know. I don't think I perceived it as real guilt. Because at the beginning of the movie, well, that's different. Because at the beginning of the movie, who's being nice to him and talking to him about his life and stuff, and then just turned around and used it against him real quick. And then, I don't know. I just feel like, why would you lie about the car crash?
That's, like, super insidious. And what you're talking about is super insidious.
I just feel like the lie kind of threw me off. Because, I mean, he could have...
Oh, sorry. No, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I think the lie just threw me off. Because if he was really feeling remorseful... then I feel like he just would have told the truth about the kid. Because, I mean, he didn't have to say, like, it was my fault. I don't know.
That's true. But at the same time, I think it's always more interesting and always more compelling when your villains or the people that you're rooting against are human beings.
Yeah.
Not when they're sort of the representation of evil.
Yes, yes.
Or the representation, like, you know, or it's like the school bully or like this archetype or this stereotype. I think it's much more interesting when the person on the other side of the coin is also a rounded character with wants, fears, hopes, desires. And I think in going back to the interpretation that I made, that it's a moment where he realizes that this method and his goal hurt people, but he's still willing to continue on with it, is a moment where you realize that this is not just a mean, you know, band teacher. He's not just like a huge jerk, not just like abusive.
He's like pursuing something.
He's kind of, he's a man with a goal who is obviously willing to do anything to achieve that. And personally for me, that is horrifying.
Yeah.
And which is why I think, you know, the choices that are made at the very end of the movie, at that ending,
what did you
are
think
so
of the
horrifying.
End? It was
yes. I thought it was
that,
incredible.
It was brutal. It was just like
I thought it was incredible because I was telling Graham earlier because he's watching me watch the end and he thinks it's hysterical because my face is going like. I did not know how this movie was going to end.
And yeah.
I thought I had like an inkling of a feeling that it was going to be like it was going to finish off with Andrew like moving on and now he's like
that's what you think and I feel like the girl at the beginning was like a plant to be like oh and then he'll realize like there's other important things in his life
and
then he just completely
and then
wow
it's a feel good movie insofar as the main character gets what he wants at the end, which is J.K. Simmons' approval.
Yeah.
He gets what he wants. It's a movie where the main character gets what they want.
But
however,
at what cost?
Well, at what cost? But here's the thing is that I never knew how this was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
I never for a minute knew. And I thought, you know, it was just going to be like another show, another chance for Andrew to like just play and have a good time.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that J.K. Simmons screwed him the
that
hell
was,
over. And that moment where he walks out on stage and goes, I knew it was you. And then he goes, what, you think I'm stupid?
Oh,
and then he walks at the mic. I thought that was like a reconciliation. He goes, Andrew, I knew it was you all along, but I still want you to play my band. And then he goes, and we're going to play a different song. And I was like, oh, no. I was right there with Andrew, like freaking out. And then he proceeds to be the biggest goddamn badass mofo on this side of the New York Philharmonic. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, no.
And the whole sort of like them.
I'm right there with you.
The eye contact,
yeah.
The soundscape. The shots are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. The lighting is awesome,
yeah.
You know? And then that ending shot where they're like looking at each
other,
like it's crazy.
And I think it ends on like a drum roll. So
exactly.
It's like,
yeah. Oops. And it feels like a sequence out of an action movie because it's like slowly zooming in on their eyes and it's flipping between the two of them. And you're like, oh my God, this is so freaking intense.
Yeah.
And then you remember that this is a movie about
jazz music,
which is supposed to be so relaxing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought it was madcap genius.
Yeah.
I thought it was a beautiful way to end it, and I actually came away just being like, that was 2 hours of my life very well spent.
Mm-hmm.
I was very happy with how that turned
out. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think, it was just...
I don't know. I don't know, Leo.
And
this
he was
might,
just here.
This might, yeah.
The
well.
Week he was less than a mile away from you.
Yeah, you know what, I'm sure...
he's never gonna come back
I'm
now.
I'm sure he's very upset about it. I'm sure he'll go cry
when he listens to our podcast every week.
With, you know,
his fiance,
supermodels,
who incidentally been here. That's
really
yeah.
Oh, cool.
Voice actor.
Is that why they were back in town?
I think he was shooting a movie. Someone was, who was, like, near, I think someone who works at the Tombs was saying they were in, like, costume. So I think they were.
That's an interesting.
He walked
why.
In with, like, 17 people, no reservation.
Fair enough. But who is not going to, like, clear a space, edit that, clear a space out for, you know, like, Leo DiCaprio. Like, it's just going to happen. This might unseat The Departed as my favorite movie we've watched so far. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Also, I
think it's number two. I think this goes.
This number, that's solid. No, like, I'll still take number two. I don't know if we watched anything else that's coming close to The Departed.
Yeah, no, Whiplash, it's great. But, like, for me, after The Departed, I'm like, you have to, everyone has to watch it now. All of you have to watch it.
you all must watch
it. It's a must watch.
I think as a member of, I think as somebody who would consider himself to be interested in the performing arts, to be a part of mm-hmm. performing arts, the global performing arts community, like, I think this movie is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely
yeah.
insane.
No,
you're very popular.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
My phone keeps ringing.
It's all those Georgetown Stories viewers. You
know? Okay. Hey, check me out. www.georgetownstories.com.
Oh, wait a second. What's that on the wall? What's that down there? Oh, it looks like a plug.
Oh,
looks like a plug.
Wow.
Oh,
I'm okay. Shameless plug. Shameless plug. GeorgetownStories.com.
Oh,
check me out. Watch my videos.
If you can see her eyes, they're full of shame. It's okay, though. No worries. I love this. Thank you actually so much for, like, suggesting this movie. I did not know what to expect at
yeah.
all.
I felt like after, because I
after The Untouchables we had.
After The Untouchables, I had seen Whiplash, and I just remember being so, like,
aren't they,
it,
aren't
like,
they relatively
tense.
Close to each other? Whiplash is, like, 44, and
it's,
isn't
I think it's higher.
Untouchables, like,
no, I think Whiplash, I mean, I think Untouchables is, like, 38.
That
right?
is a travesty.
Right? I
that
told you. You didn't understand my angle. Like, why is this 38?
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
But that's another podcast.
No,
it's fine.
Now I am 100% on the same page as you.
Yeah.
Now I am.
Also, apparently,
that.
Untouchables is, like, everyone's favorite movie. Like,
there have been a lot of angry comments.
Yeah.
About
I don't understand.
You know what? Listen to the podcast before you you criticize us on Facebook.
Exactly.
All right, everybody? Come on, guys.
But
it's almost like people just jump to conclusions based
right?
off of the headline and or status.
That's crazy, though.
Golly,
who
what
would
a
do
world.
That?
What a world, Liz Tights. What a world!
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
This was a phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
I'm speechless. I have nothing left to say.
Yeah. I guess this is kind of off topic. It's on topic. It's about the movie. I don't know. I was just thinking, is that how you become one of the greats? He was like, the line was always like, do you know how he became one of
he
the greats?
Great.
He threw a symbol at his head. Like, is that really the way?
So is this this is an interesting question, though. Does it matter? Does it matter if that's how you become a great? Because that's how this guy wants you to become a great. That's the thing, is that this guy is selling one item. He's selling greatness. And you know what? You got to sell everything.
But is he
you
selling greatness? Because have any of his students become the greats? It's not like he has.
Well, I think that's the point with the point is that he, the point of the his former student is that, like, he took this guy who was screwing up, who everybody else had given up on, and he became first
pretty
chair
good.
Trumpet
yeah.
and like on like. And you know what? He admits that he's never found that great. But I think he knows that he has the ability within him to push people to
mm-hmm.
greatness. It's about whether or not you have that inside of you.
I don't know.
That's the thing, is that maybe he's not necessarily selling greatness. He's selling a path to becoming
mm-hmm.
the great.
Yeah.
The great. You have to have greatness inside of you, first
yeah.
of all. And I think, you know, based on the number of prodigies who come through jazz and whatnot, I think I was... We did a story
like
this
a
summer.
12-year-old in the Grammys.
We did a story this summer about, like, some kid who was, like, 8 years old in Singapore and just released his first piano jazz album, and it was incredible.
Yeah, they had that kid on the Grammys.
Incredible.
He was like 12, and they used him to
yeah.
shame people and to stop pirating music. It was really, like, he played a piece, and he was like, "This kid just played for you. How much is a song worth to you?" And we're all like, "Okay, I'm just gonna go on YouTube and rip this song. It's fine."
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah, we'll get into that probably on another podcast
yes.
at some point. But you know, it's a good question. So how do you become great?
Yeah.
And he's selling it one way, and Andrew's willing to buy. So
yeah,
he's willing to buy.
I get that.
And I think he achieves that at the end. Yeah.
I guess.
You're right. It's up for interpretation the way the movie ends. It ends, but it ends with sort of that mutual.
I think it ends them on the same level of just like hunger to be great, but I don't know if he ever. If he hit that mark. Because, I mean, also, how do you define being a great... Like, he wants to be remembered when he dies.
Yep.
Is that really going to be that one defining moment? Or, like, going forward, is that...
Well, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, a man never really dies until he's forgotten.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
Live till you're 90 or and have nobody remember you. Live till you're 34 and be immortalized forever.
You talked it to the people. Okay.
Hendrix, Cobain, you know. I mean, I guess the Rolling Stones are a bad example.
Yeah, because they're all...
What kind of world will we leave behind for Keith Richards? Bastard's going to outlive us all.
For real. All right. I think that's all I had to say.
I'm good. I'm fresh
Good
out.
Movie. Yeah. I liked it. I was a fan. Yeah. All right. I'm Danielle.
I'm Chris.
Listen to more podcasts at Halftime G... No. What is it? GeorgetownVoice.com/halftime. Listen to more podcasts. Read more articles. Generally enjoy yourself. Follow us at Halftime GU on Twitter.
Go listen to more of the 250. Let's see. I think this is our...
Do that. It's 11. I don't know. I never counted. I thought
last
was 10.
Yeah, I was about to
10.
Say, what number? What
this
number
might be 11.
Oh, we had
might...
our... Oh, wow. We should have celebrated the anniversary last time. 10 episodes in.
Yeah. Maybe next time.
Fair enough.
Also, you know, go to GeorgetownStories.com.
Oh, God.
Watch my videos.
Get over yourself.
And I think that's it. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that's what this is all about? You think you're better than us?
Catch on quick. Are you in Model UN?
I got a reply for you, Andrew. You think Carlton football is a joke? Come play with us.
Four words you will never hear from the NFL.